You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
It's the 12th morning after the night before. The night before being May 2nd, with the final federal election results. Time enough to move beyond spontaneous emotions, both hot and cold. Time now to begin sober reflection on what the voting results tell us about the different concerns and preferences of people across Canada. Time to begin sober reflection on what challenges progressives face and what vision and strategies we need to develop and organize around. To help begin those reflections, I'm joined in the studio by Derek O'Keefe. Derek is co-chair of StopWar.ca and also the Canadian Peace Alliance. Derek also writes frequently for Ravel.ca. Good morning, Derek.
And good morning.
Welcome back to Red Eye. So let's begin with what we can learn from the election results. Despite the expectations, the percentage of eligible voters who actually cast a ballot was only slightly more than the low turnout at previous elections. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's disconcerting, but I think it's part of a decades-long trend. Whereby people feel alienated from the political process, where political parties' memberships are in decline, and where in general the public turns away from the what they perceive to be vulgar, cynical sphere of life, electoral politics. And, you know, Stephen Harper and his party and their party machine, they realize that having lower, low-ish voter turnouts helps them. And so... part of their strategy, they had very particular elements of the Canadian population that they were targeting to become conservative voters, but they certainly didn't see any benefit from increasing people's overall participation, let alone moving towards reforming the electoral system in a more democratic direction that would actually reflect people's preferences. So I think one of the main reasons you see voter turnout stuck around 60%, a little bit higher, is that in a large majority of ridings in the country, people feel that their real preference is not going to be reflected in any meaningful way. So they're either voting for their second choice or they're voting for a lesser evil. And that doesn't motivate people to get out to the polls. So I think what it shows us is that it's important to have these youth-driven and voter registration efforts, and youth-driven efforts to get other young people to vote. And we saw a lot of that in this election campaign, a lot of creative stuff, a lot of high-energy stuff. But it really didn't translate into a huge increase in voter turnout. So I think what it shows is we need a concerted grassroots campaign for electoral reform. And actually today, May 14th, is a National Day of Action for Electoral Reform, including a rally at the Vancouver Vancouver Public Library downtown at 2 p.m. So I think this is vital. And it won't come primarily from the political parties. We need a people's movement to push for real electoral reform.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we talk a little bit about sort of some of the things that need to be done, let's just look a little bit at the actual results of the election. One of the things is that the Liberal vote literally collapsed, and despite that collapse, the Conservatives didn't gain much in popular vote, maybe a percent or so, yet they were able to gain a lot of seats. What happened there? Why were they able to gain so many seats?
Well, they gained around 2% of the vote, the Conservatives. And I guess, first of all, it's important to remember just how skewed the playing field is, how tilted the playing field is, and how much Harper and others tilted it. The Conservatives had a much bigger budget than any other party, being backed by the biggest corporate interests in our society, and they use that relentlessly to promote their own agenda and to viciously attack the other parties and their leaders with, you know, endless television ads. So there's a very uneven playing field, and yet they were only able to increase their vote a little bit. I think that tells us that although they've now achieved a majority government, they have not achieved a consent from the majority of people in Canada for their agenda. So this is a, you know, it's a bit of a frightening situation that we're in, because now we're locked into this conservative majority for 4 or 5 years that really doesn't reflect the preferences of the Canadian people. But I guess I should talk a little bit about the Liberal collapse and where that came from. This is the other traditional corporate ruling party of Canada, and I think it's one of the biggest stories of the election is its utter decimation. Having Michael Ignatieff lose his own seat in suburban Toronto was an absolute shocker. I don't even think he had a speech. He had several speeches written ready to concede the election, but I don't think any of them included the prospect of losing his own seat. This was a real shock, and it was symbolic of that suburban Toronto, southern Ontario Liberal base just collapsing. And that vote going over largely to the Conservatives, but also to the NDP. And just getting back to the historic significance of the Liberal collapse, in the 20th century, this was the most successful political franchise in Western Europe. In all of Western Europe and North America, all of the Western democracies, the Liberal Party was in power the greatest percentage of the 20th century. So this was the traditional ruling party of Canada, the natural governing party, collapsing. The one thing we can take hope from is that Harper has yet to make the Conservative Party of Canada the natural governing party of Canada. He's got a majority, but he doesn't have a foothold in... he only has a small foothold in Quebec. He was not able to pick anything up in Quebec. In fact, he lost a few seats. And so I think that's our big hope, is that the... progressive majority in Quebec strongly rejected Harper and his conservative agenda. And so I think more than ever, it's kind of obvious with the new NDP presence in Quebec, but more than ever, progressives and the left in English Canada, we really have to make connections with our brothers and sisters in Quebec, and we really have to link up with them. We can't afford to have two solitudes on the left, because we have to be in touch with them. They're really the one holdout to Harper having genuinely achieved his goal of making the Conservatives the natural governing party of Canada. And if Harper can do that, I mean, we're not just looking at 4 or 5 years, we're looking at the better part of a generation with him as our prime minister. And that's frightening, and we've got to figure out how to stop that.
And what do you think Harper is on Harper's agenda at the moment? What do you think he will move on now that he has a clear majority?
Well, I guess the one thing we can, in a way, take heart on is that it is a long-term project that Stephen Harper has. He's not intending to be a one-term majority prime minister. So I think he's going to continue, as he has been, to move generally, methodically and slowly, and move where he can. So I don't think he's going to immediately bring in a sweeping austerity agenda, or immediately try to reopen questions like the right to abortion or the right to equal marriage. I think he's going to work where he can. So first of all, he's going to be able to ram through his law and order agenda, making our judicial system and prison system more like the United States, which will end up having more people in jail, more marginalized people in jail, more Aboriginal people in jail, and just a more punitive justice system. He's also going to be able to appoint a number of Supreme Court justices, which is of great concern, because the appointments that Harper makes during these next few years will be sitting on the Canadian Supreme Court for decades, and will affect the whole direction of the Canadian judicial system. Harper will try to find wedges where he can bring in economic austerity. There's the right now the federal government and the person in charge of Canada Post, his name is Deepak Chopra, not the writer and the guru, the self-help guru, the Deepak Chopra that is the person in charge of Canada Post is looking really to squash CUPW and really to push back their wages and to try to start to implement implement privatization of the postal system in Canada. So this strike could start as early as late this month. The union took an overwhelming strike vote. So that could be the first real battle and test of how the social movements and labor movement will fight back against Harper. So I think it's really important that people find ways to support the union in their struggle, because It's kind of like when Reagan, Libby Davies actually made this connection at a forum earlier this week. Ronald Reagan, early in his term, had the battle with the air traffic controllers, and he ended up just firing them all because he couldn't break their union. But this was like, you know, he was willing to go a long way with this, with these public sector workers just to crush their union. So we really have to draw a line and support our CUPW union brothers later this month. And, you know, there'll be, as the issues come up, Harper, based on the fight back and the mobilization of people, he'll go as far as he can on his agenda of austerity for working people and the poor and tax cuts for corporations and the rich.
You talked a little bit about the NDP and the rise in Quebec. What are the what challenges does this huge expansion in Quebec mean for the NDP, and also what are like the relationships between the social movements and the NDP in terms of the fight back against some of Harper's agendas? What are some opportunities there for people?
Well, there are definitely some opportunities and bigger challenges, I would say, especially as someone out here in Vancouver. I had never conceived of the possibility of the NDP gaining more than a seat or two in Quebec. The Bloc Québécois generally had a very similar social political perspective and tended to get the lion's share of social democratic or left or moderate left voters in Quebec. So this is a big surprise and a big change. And I think one thing I wanted to say that I think is really wrong in interpreting this NDP vote in Quebec is the idea that this is the death of Québécois wanting sovereignty or the death of Québécois nationalism. Everyone from Stephen Harper to the NDP's Stephen Lewis was making this assertion the night of the election and the next few days. You know, Stephen Lewis said something to the effect of, you know, Quebec voted for Canada. This is sort of the end of the sovereigntist movement. And polling and also just talking and hearing from people in Quebec, this is not the case. The vote for the NDP was a shift to a different opposition party that they felt could represent their interests in Ottawa, in the federal government, and, you know, shifting from one moderate social democratic party to another moderate social democratic party. And so the question of Quebec sovereignty is still there. And this will be a very difficult dynamic within the NDP, because you have traditionally the NDP has not been respectful of or sensitive to the aspirations of Quebec for self-determination. This played itself out, has played itself out during Jack Layton's leadership as well. Initially, Jack Layton had said he was opposed to the Clarity Act, which was a move by the Liberal Party to make it harder for Quebec to formulate its own referendum question on independence. So when Chrétien and the Liberals brought in this bill, Layton was initially opposed to it, and saying, you know, Quebecois have a right to formulate their own question and determine how they will ask people if they want to remain part of Canada. There was a big backlash to Layton's stance on this from some of the Western NDP, led by Bill Blakey and others, who strong Federalists and strongly opposed to Quebec self-determination. So, you know, I don't need to tell that whole story to say that there's a new tension and dynamic within the NDP. And you now have a situation where more than 50% of the NDP caucus is the Quebec NDP, and a lot of them new, and a lot of them coming from all sorts of different political backgrounds, probably everything from disaffected liberals who decided to run for the NDP to radical social movement activists who decided to run for the NDP, not thinking they could really win, but getting elected. So I think it is an exciting dynamic in the sense that it could bring some more radical parliamentarians into contact with activists in Canada. And I say that hopefully because Quebec has traditionally and still today has the most vibrant social movements, labor movement, Palestine solidarity movement, anti-war movement. You know, they're just bigger in Quebec and better organized. So a number of the new MPs in Quebec do come out of those movements and still have some connections. So it's a challenge and opportunity for us way out here in Vancouver to finally start paying paying attention to Quebec politics. I read French. I speak it passably, but, you know, I do read it. But I haven't paid close enough attention. And I think all of us should start reading progressive websites and, you know, newspapers out of Quebec, and probably hopefully bringing some of those new members of parliament out here to participate in forums and talk about the new political landscape in Canada.
Mm-hmm. What other opportunities do you think there are to strengthen grassroots movements as a way, you know, to challenge this, I guess, the rise in the conservatism in the parliament and to bolster left-wing forces?
Yeah, well, we're going to need to do a lot. We're going to need to do a lot more than we've done in recent years, and we're going to need to experiment with new tactics or bringing back old tactics. You know, I should speak mostly about the anti-war movement, which I play a leading role in, or that's been my main activity. But before I do that, if I could just, you know, criticize another social movement, which is the labor movement, and particularly the Canadian Labor Congress. It's my perception from somewhat from the outside that they've spent far too much of their energy and money and time on lobbying on Parliament Hill and trying to influence politics by lobbying all the political parties in Ottawa, and not enough energy and time and money and resources into mobilizing their base. To taking action in the streets and talking with their membership and having their membership go out and talk to their communities. With a Harper majority, you know, the battle is not going to be won by lobbying the opposition parties, who on issue by issue could hold the Conservatives somewhat in check, theoretically, at least in the past minority situation. So now it's going to take like big struggles in the streets and big mobilizations to hold Harper back. And it's not impossible. Remember here in, it's maybe not the best example because he was able to ram through a lot of his agenda, but when Gordon Campbell had 77 of 79 seats in the BC legislature, the labor movement still went out initially and had some big mobilizations. They stopped after a few years, which I think was, again, very unfortunate. But, you know, when there's no opposition in Parliament or an opposition that can't stop anything in Parliament, it's very important that tens of thousands of people mobilize in the streets, and we use all kinds of tactics, and not just public demonstrations, but also things like we saw during the election, some of the very clever video and social media campaigns that were launched against Harper. The most notable, I guess, or the most... the biggest hit during the campaign was the website shitharperdid.com, and they did a number of videos that went viral. Now we're going to need shitharperisstilldoing.com, and we're going to need that energy and that creativity to carry on, because that did get people excited, and it did really clarify who Stephen Harper was and what his record had been in power. So, yeah, we're going to need all kinds of things, and it's not hopeless. Politics is not just the ballot box every few years. That's really just a very small part of it. And and the various people fighting on their own individual issues have to find new ways to connect and support each other, because otherwise Harper will pick us off one at a time.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly have our work cut out for us in the next few years. So, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Great. Well, thank you very much for having me on again.
I've been speaking with Derek O'Keefe. Derek is co-chair of StopWar.ca and also the Canadian Peace Alliance, and he writes frequently for Rabble.ca.